Welcome to the Best of PW Torch Livecast for December 14th, 2018. I'm Wade Keller, and I'm here to introduce you to today's selection from 5 years ago. This is the WWE TLC pay-per-view post-game show with Greg Parks hosting with live callers and James Caldwell joining the show midway to talk about his in-person experience at the event. So an on-site correspondent, live calls, and Greg's thoughts on the event on this, the Best of PW Torch Livecast selection, TLC's post-game show from 5 years ago. Enjoy. And then be sure to tune in this Sunday as Greg Parks hosts this year's post-TLC live call-in show. Just visit pwtorchlivecast.com to stream the show live after TLC ends. And then, of course, you can download the show later right here on the Livecast feed. And don't forget to check out today's Interview Friday edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast with ex-WWE creative team member Matt McCarthy, who joins me to talk about TLC. We preview this year's event, we'll go through just about all the matches, and also talk philosophically about what's going on in the wrestling industry today with, as always, some great behind-the-scenes insights on Vince McMahon and the creative process from Matt. So check that out. It's available right now. Just search Wade Keller wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe to both the red and the blue logo, but the Interview Friday show is available right now on our blue logo show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. But while you're at it, subscribe to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows, the red logo that pops up when you search Wade Keller, and you'll get my post-Raw and post-SmackDown shows, which includes live callers, emails, co-host commentary, and on-site correspondence. But here we go with today's 5 years ago TLC post-show.
This is Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks joining you for the post-TLC livecast here on pwtorchlivecast.com. I'll be joined later in the show by Torch assistant editor James Caldwell, who attended TLC live in Houston tonight. Until then, I'll be holding down the fort solo. If you'd like to call in, and we have a ton of callers standing by to chime in about the show, but if you do want to call in and chat about the pay-per-view, the number to dial is 646-721-9828. To start us off, I'll do a quick rundown of the matches on the pay-per-view, some results, maybe some thoughts thrown in, and then we can take it from there with callers until my partner in crime shows up. CM Punk versus The Shield, the first of 2 3-on-1 handicap matches, started the night on pay-per-view. After the build-up surrounding this match being that Punk, knowing he was going to lose, planning to take down as many Shield members as he could in the process, Punk ended up winning in about 15 minutes. We had Roman Reigns selling an eye injury on the outside. Punk ended up pinning Dean Ambrose for the victory. And the continued slow burn of the Shield continued to build here. So that'll be something to keep in mind and keep an eye on, especially heading to the Royal Rumble. The second match of the night saw AJ Lee take on Natalya in a Divas match, and again, somewhat of a surprise result here, especially given some late-breaking news that came across before this pay-per-view of AJ Lee perhaps being in hot water in the eyes of WWE management. AJ did end up defending her title successfully against Natalya, getting the win in about 6 minutes. I thought this was one of Natalya's better matches as of late. I've been a little critical of her in the ring for a while now, I guess, but she really pulled it through here, and she and AJ put on a good match. Big E Langston took on Damian Sandow in match 3 for the Intercontinental Championship. Big E Langston was able to retain in a so-so match. It was just kind of there. Won't be remembered for anything too important beyond that in the coming days, but it was another win for Big E Langston and his continued build. We had, throughout the night, Vince McMahon visiting with Randy Orton and John Cena prior to their unification match. And I'm not really sure if we were supposed to hear what Vince was talking to Cena and Orton about. The audio in both short backstage segments was very unclear. It was sort of hard to hear to the point where you weren't sure if you were supposed to hear it or not. But it ended up not really playing a big role in the finish. Match 3, what some are calling the best match of the night, was the 4-way WWE Tag Team Championship match. Cody Rhodes and Goldust successfully defended their Tag Team Championships against Rey Mysterio and The Big Show, The Real Americans, and Curtis Axel and Ryback, affectionately known as Ryback. So I thought the match was good and picked up, especially when it was down to Ray and Big Show against Goldust and Cody Rhodes. We had Brodus Clay in another bonus match taking on R-Truth. This whole match stemming from Brodus Clay being upset that Xavier Woods, I guess, flirted or was a better dancer than he was when he loaned out the Funkadactyls to the debuting Woods. And very simple story, although I'm not sure I'm really comfortable with the Funkadactyls being used as objects in this, but it was Brodus Clay again teasing that heel turn, Tensai imploring him throughout the match to pin R-Truth when he had the opportunity. Instead, Clay wanted to inflict more of a beating, and that came back to bite him in the end as R-Truth was able to beat him. Kofi Kingston versus The Miz, another late add. This was a no disqualification match based on a pre-show incident between Kingston and The Miz. Kofi won in about 8 minutes. I guess the Miz's heel turn is official again here, but it seems that way to me. The second of two 3-on-1 handicap matches took place next with Daniel Bryan defeating Bray Wyatt, Eric Rowan, and Luke Harper. I'm not sure how hard it is for WWE to have both Bryan and Punk beat the odds on the same show. Punk I can see winning, especially if WWE is building Punk to face Triple H or to have a major part in the Authority storyline moving forward. Daniel Bryan here. Actually, it was Wyatt, Rowan, and Harper who won the match. I'm reading off of PWTorch.com editor Wade Keller's report, and he had Bryan as the winner in 13 minutes. And when I thought about it, I'm like, wait, did that really happen? I don't think so. And it was in fact Bray Wyatt pinning Daniel Bryan with his sister Abigail. So I rescind my comments about WWE having both underdogs win there. And yes, I did watch the show, believe it or not. But I that's how much I believe Wade. I saw the show, and I saw Bryan as the winner in his report, and I still believe him. Randy Orton versus John Cena was the main event in the much-ballyhooed World Heavyweight title, WWE title unification match. A lot of speculation going into this one. Would WWE dare do some kind of screwy finish after the last several months on pay-per-view? Would they have Triple H come in and somehow win the match, win the titles despite not being in the match? In the end, it was very simple. Randy Orton ended up winning. He took both titles down. He is the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, which is apparently what they're going to be calling it. Vince McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, and Triple H all came out at the end to stand behind him as a show of unity, a show of solidarity for the McMahon-Helmsley regime or the Authority, whatever you want to call it. So I thought it was probably a thumbs-in-the-middle leading-up show. The filler was obviously filler, and going in, this was really a one-match show, that being the main event. But I thought the 3-on-1 matches were good enough. I thought the filler matches had their moments. I thought the tag match was over 3 stars. The four-way tag match was over 3 stars. Good enough to, for me at this point, and maybe talking with some of the callers, talking with James when he comes on, maybe I'll have a more solidified number in my head. But right now I'm thinking thumbs in the middle, trending upward at this point. Again, if you want to call in, the number to call in is 646-721-9828. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here hosting the post WWE TLC live cast here. And correct the call. How about that? And our first caller is from the 209 area code. 209, you're on the air. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Greg. This is Eric from Stockton, California. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Eric. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Hey, I'm with you. I thought it was a pretty good show. If I had to give it out of 10, I'd float, you know, like 6.5, maybe up to 7. It was pretty good. I was pleasantly surprised that there was a semi-clean finish, or actually what would be considered a clean finish considering what they've been doing lately for the main event. So that would have knocked it down a couple notches in my eyes if they had done another screwy finish, but I was glad that they didn't. I just wanted to get your thoughts on for one, Bray Wyatt. I personally really like Bray Wyatt. I always heard about the control he had over his character when he was with when he was in NXT, or Way Bryant, as Mick Foley called him during the night. But I just think he does really have control over that character. He really knows the gimmick, and he does it really well. I just wanted to know what you think is next for him and for the Wyatt family, and then what's next for Daniel Bryan. And then also, do we still think that Matt Morgan is going to be coming back? Because he mentioned during a Friday interview that he's going to be on TV by the end of the year. And given TNA's current financial situation, I can't see them bringing him back. So do we still think he's going to show up in WWE, and how do we think they're going to reintroduce him?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Eric. I did notice Mick Foley referring to Bray Wyatt as Wade Bryant, and I kind of wondered how many eggnogs he had had up to that point with the Santa theme and all. Bray Wyatt, to me, is an interesting guy because he came in, his character was something that a lot of people heard a buzz about in NXT. He showed up on the main roster with a lot of fanfare, but lately has kind of been lost in the shuffle. So, you know, the win tonight tells me that they're going to be trending in the upward direction here going forward. What that means, it's hard. I kind of want Bray to break out from Rowan and Harper. And I don't mean that they need to break up as a group. I would just prefer to see Bray more in singles action, because we've seen a lot of Rowan and Harper as a tag team. We've seen six-man tags with Bray getting involved. But I would like to see Bray get a singles push away from Rowan and Harper. And that's kind of what I'm hoping happens here in the near future. For Daniel Bryan, I'm really intrigued to see how WWE capitalizes, if at all, on what happened Monday night. And people can point to tonight's match to say, well, see, this is WWE just keeping Bryan down. They could have had him win. They could have used this to propel him to the main events or whatever. I think the Wyatts needed this win. And I thought it was fine that they beat Daniel Bryan here. I had no problem with that. So with CM Punk apparently getting involved with Triple H, although that really wasn't teased tonight, you got to think Randy Orton needs a babyface opponent going forward. They could do a rematch with John Cena. They've got Punk. They could do that. I think it's too early to go back to Daniel Bryan. I think there's a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths as it relates to Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton and that series of matches they had. And I think if you put them together again so soon, you run the risk of fans remembering those awful string of pay-per-views. And I'm not sure they really want to go back to that. But now with only one major title, you've essentially cut in half your main event, not for pay-per-view, but for SmackDown, which was often the home of the world title and was treated as a big deal on that show for so long. As for Matt Morgan, it's really hard to say. I know that him saying that he's going to be on TV before the end of the year is not new. I think I've heard him say that before. The buzz around with him going to WWE is essentially gone. I don't think there hasn't been much talk of that lately. I agree with you. I don't think TNA is in his future either. This could be, you know, this could be something non-wrestling related for all we know, I guess. So I'm not really sure where he goes. I think he has a spot in WWE. There is a role for him in that company, should WWE choose to go that direction. But for whatever reason, WWE is not in a hurry to bring Matt Morgan aboard. So I'm kind of hesitant to pick WWE or TNA for where he goes, because it may not be either one of them. And I think you brought up another good point, Eric. As you were talking, you said you were pleasantly surprised. And I think that would be a good way to describe my feelings about this show. I had very low expectations coming in, a combination of WWE only really advertising that main event as the match of the show. With one match shows, you really run the risk of having the crowd sit on their hands for the other two and a half hours. And, you know, obviously the subpar previous pay-per-views played a part in really not feeling this one leading in. So I would agree. I think I was pleasantly surprised by the show. I think that's a good way to put it.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Moving on to the next caller, we have 706. 706, you're on the air. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
How's it going, Gray? This is James from Columbus.
Hi, James. How are you?
How's it going? I just had I just wanted to comment on the pay-per-view. The only thing I saw was the main event, and I just saw on WWE.com the rest of the results. But, I thought all things considered, it was okay pay-per-view, but that's not the best Randy Orton-John Cena match I've ever seen. And I thought for it to be the undisputed, or whatever they're calling it now, for that particular title, I didn't think it lived up to the hype. Or it probably wasn't ever going to live up to the hype with the two contenders that were a part of it. But I need to see the rest of the show. But everything that you've called out as far as the results, I kind of predicted that as well. So, to me, the pay-per-view was kind of predictable without actually seeing the whole pay-per-view. But just to get into my questions, first question, do they never bring up that Jericho is the first undisputed champion ever again? And do you think that if and when Jericho does come back, they won't allow him to bring that up anymore? Next is, the whole big match feel. I never really got that out of, well, excluding the go-home show, I never really got the big match feel out of this whole match with Cena and Randy Orton. Like, you take into account UFC or boxing, even with the smallest or the, I guess, least drawing match, they make it seem like it's a really big deal to everybody else. And I didn't really get this feel. And just earlier today, I'm not a TNA fan, but I am a fan of the lockdown match between Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle, the one with the cage. And everything about that match, as I was watching it, that just seemed like a tremendous deal. And I didn't get that out of the last few matches that WWE for pay-per-views have put together, minus the John Cena, Daniel Bryan match. And even that wasn't a big deal because it was like a random lottery and like, okay, I'm going to pick you, Daniel Bryan, and now you're going to be my contender for this particular title. And just the last question is, what are they doing with the characters? Because it seems like they have characters but no real direction. And it's kind of like, even at the highest level with John Cena, like who is John Cena? Is John Cena just a guy who has the best win-loss average in the company? Like, who is Randy Orton? Is he the Viper? Is he the Apex Predator? Like, I'm not really seeing much direction as far as the characters go. Like, heels don't seem to draw enough heat to where people hate them when they come out. And there's only really three baby faces, John Cena, Daniel Bryan, and CM Punk. And everybody else is kind of languishing, mainly the heels. Even with Randy Orton, he's languishing because all the heat is going to the Authority. So, just to wrap it up, what do you think is missing from the characters? Is it just the storyline, or is it just they're not drawing enough heat on either side? And that's all I have.
Okay, thanks for the call, James. I'll start with the characters one, and that's been a real complaint for a while now, is how one-dimensional a lot of the characters seem. And what's really disappointing about that is you've got 3 hours of Raw, you've got 2 hours of SmackDown, you've got an hour of main event each week, you've got 3 hours of pay-per-view once a month. There really is no excuse to properly flesh out your main characters, You can have the Kofi Kingstons who are in the mid-card and not spend a lot of TV time on them. That's fine. But if you've got guys who you want to use to draw money on pay-per-view and you want to use to draw eyeballs to your TV shows, you've got to make them three-dimensional. And any TV show you watch almost any TV show you watch at least attempts to do that. The characters are three-dimensional. They're not just a one-note character. And Michael Cole throwing out these empty phrases and cliches to describe the characters, like you said, the Viper, Randy Orton, the Apex Predator, okay, that doesn't really tell me a lot about him. And part of it is the inconsistency with the character, too. When you go back and heel to face and heel to face so often, like a Big Show, Randy Orton hasn't done that so much, but he's been on both sides of the ledger quite a bit during his career. It's hard to tell a consistent three-dimensional story when you've got a guy whose morals seem to vacillate depending on what the storyline calls for. And that's a problem, and I don't think WWE is equipped the way creative is built right now to properly address those issues, unfortunately. Going back to your first point, the main event, John Cena versus Randy Orton, I had it at 4 stars, which actually coincided with Wade Keller's star rating. I thought it was a very good main event. You know, you could make the argument there's been so many Cena Orton matches. Was it the best? Was it not the best? I thought it was very well done, and I may have tacked on a few quarter stars maybe for the fact that it was a clean finish and the fact that there was no interference, there were no ref bumps, anything like that. And I think what really helped is the TLC concept distinguished it from the rest of the show. You know, there was a complaint, and even I've complained that there were no tables matches, there were no ladders matches. It's a TLC pay-per-view with only one match being held under those rules, but it did help to set that match apart from the others on the show. So I gave it 4 stars upon first viewing. You mentioned Chris Jericho. JBL often brought up that this is going to be the first undisputed champion in WWE history. Chris, WWE has played fast and loose with their history for forever, so we shouldn't be surprised by that. The next question is, can you read anything into it as far as Chris Jericho, when he inevitably returns again, does he make it a point to bring this up? Is it part of a whole story they're going to tell when Jericho comes and maybe gets involved in the undisputed title chase and says, hey, Orton wasn't the first undisputed champion, I was. And I tend to think it's more of WWE wanting to hype this moment as a big deal so they're willing to forget things that have happened previously in order to do that rather than setting something up for the future. Big match feel, I would tend to agree with that a little bit. I thought WWE did a nice job on the go-home show to make this feel like a big deal, but part of it is because there is so little time in between pay-per-views, especially this time of year. You would need about 3 months to properly build a match of this magnitude, or at least the magnitude that WWE was billing it as. Truly, the biggest moment in sports entertainment history, whatever superlative they were using to describe this match. But you would need about 3 months to build that up. With the way the pay-per-views are set up, especially this time of year, that's just not possible. They had to condense 3 months of hype into 3 weeks. They probably didn't do it very well, and that's the trouble with trying to shoehorn this type of match into a TLC pay-per-view and not using a legacy pay-per-view like a Royal Rumble or a WrestleMania to really do that. So, yeah, I think the big match feel suffered a bit simply based on where WWE decided it was necessary to unify the titles. They decided it was necessary to do that in December at TLC, at the end of a long string of pay-per-view after pay-per-view after pay-per-view, and I think that did hurt it. Again, thanks for the call, James. If anyone else wants to call in, the number is 646-721-9828, trying to get through as many calls as we can in the next, whenever I fall asleep, probably. So we'll go to the next caller. It is the 423 area code. 423, you are on the air. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's Ian from Tennessee.
Hey, how's it going? What's your thoughts on TLC?
Well, first, I was going to say that I ordered it on a PS3, and I had no problems. I was quite happy about that, surprisingly. But with the finish of the main event, was there something else supposed to happen? Because Orton looked awfully unsure about his hook and those belts when he did.
That's a good question, and I think the fans felt that way too. I think the fans were waiting for that other shoe to drop, and Orton's reaction could have simply been the fact that he didn't trust the authority. We saw on Raw and SmackDown, you know, on Raw, Triple H pedigreed him. On SmackDown, Triple H made some comments that were bordering on threatening for Randy Orton. So Orton probably didn't know if he had the support of the authority or not. So when they all came to the ring to congratulate him, he may have been a little wary, and that may have been playing up into the storyline.
Yeah, it just seemed a little off to me. Like, I don't know if John Cena got legit knocked out or, and he was supposed to make the save or what, but it just seemed a little weird.
I thought Cena's reaction was good on the outside, hoping he wasn't knocked out, of course. That one reaction shot they showed him, kind of, you read the look on his face like, man, I had it. It was so close, and now I have to start the chase all over again. And it looked kind of like being today, a Sunday, you see that look on the face of coaches or quarterbacks who just let the game slip out of their hands. I won't bring up any names, but I'm sure if you're a football fan, you can probably think of one or two today that happened to. But, yeah, I thought that was a great reaction shot on Cena, and it didn't seem to me like he was supposed to get involved, that it was just a reaction shot to, you know, as Wade Keller likes to say, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, and we have the agony of defeat right there on the face of John Cena.
Well, it was definitely a lot better than the last few of their shows, but they've got a long way to sell me on going to New Orleans like I was planning on for WrestleMania. But anyway, have a good night.
All right, thanks a lot for the call. Next up is the 630 area code, 630. You're on the post-show live cast. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
How you doing? This is Craig from Chicago, VIP member.
Excellent. Good to hear from you, Craig.
Yeah. You know, for a match of this magnitude, where you are unifying the WWE, WWF Undisputed Championship, and in all reality, the Intercontinental Championship, because that's what that belt really was when Triple H faced Rob Van Dam many years ago in a unification match. You know, anyways, when you're unifying a match this big, I really feel that the lack of blood takes away from it. And I know they're trying to be safe, and they're trying to cater to the kiddies and everything, but in all reality, more adults watch professional wrestling. Yes, it's professional wrestling, not entertainment. More adults watch it than little kiddies, so you would think that they want to cater to their audience a little more. I just feel the lack of blood in this match, and I'm not talking about that little bump Orc got on his head. Lack of blood really took away from a match of this magnitude. What do you think?
Well, you know, I'm sort of used to the fact that they don't have blood anymore, and that really doesn't even enter my mind anymore at this point, which is, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's probably a good thing. But, you know, I kind of get the feeling that I don't know, we've moved beyond that a little bit. And, you know, you can make the argument that if you've got a match involving chairs, if you've got a match involving ladders, if you've got a match involving tables, that someone is bound to bleed somewhere along the way. So it would be more realistic to have someone bleed, and as you said, not the kind of Randy Orton blood we saw, but more the blood that we're used to seeing as wrestling fans. But WWE's made a conscious decision that's not going to happen, and it's not only for the PG environment, but really it's for the safety of the wrestler. And that's gigging oneself is kind of an old school type of thing that in today's environment where you're more focused on the safety of the wrestlers and everything like that, that's just not something that WWE is willing to risk at this point, I guess. Craig, any follow-up to that or any other thoughts on the pay-per-view?
Well, I mean, the old saying, and it still goes all the way back, is red equals green, blood equals money. In a match like this, you got to have it. You really, really do. I don't know why they want to play it like this, you know, considering just 6 years ago, they bled every match. Now, I'm not saying you got to have blood in every single match, but a match of this magnitude, you should be bleeding. Bottom line, I mean, no matter what they want to say or do, you know, it just adds to the match. I feel that they've gotten away from that. It's, you know, to me, it's just that they've really alienated their fan base and lost touch with you know, it's back to what the mid '90s were. You're basically insulting the fans' intelligence. But that's how I see it, you know. I've been watching this stuff for well over 35 years, so I haven't stopped one bit. Still watching.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
All right, Craig. You know, I understand the point that there is, you could argue that there is a time and a place for it. And if used judiciously, then, you know, you could make the argument that it's appropriate to use. But, you know, would Blood, you know, I give this match 4 stars. Would Blood have bumped it up to 4.5 stars? No. You know, it was a good match with or without the Blood. I don't really see the need for Blood personally to enhance the match. I think, you know, that's something that WWE has said, listen, we're not doing that. If you start making exceptions here and there, then everybody's going to want an exception. And it's just easier to say no across the board. And I think that's what WWE is sticking to. But thanks for the call, Craig. Appreciate your business as a VIP member on PWTorch.com. We'll reset the show as we're approaching the midnight hour here on the East Coast. My name is Greg Parks. I'm a columnist for Pro Wrestling Torch and PWTorch.com here on the Pro Wrestling Torch livecast special post-TLC pay-per-view edition. I'll be joined by the regular host of this, James Caldwell, who is the assistant editor at PW Torch. He was at the show live, and when he calls in, we'll get a live perspective of the show from him. And, of course, some thoughts on the show as a whole as well. So we, until that time goes, we'll move along to the next caller. It's the 314 area code, 314. You're on the air. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi there, Greg. This is Damien from St. Louis, Missouri, and I am a VIP member.
Excellent, Damien. Thanks for your business. How's it going tonight?
It's going fine, Greg. How's it going with you?
I'm fantastic. You have any thoughts on TLC or perhaps the unification title match?
I did see the TLC pay-per-view tonight, you know, and it was just an okay show. It didn't wow me. Obviously with the string of pay-per-views they have had lately, I've been kind of desensitized a little bit as far as getting excited about it. And I'm definitely surprised that there was a actual clean finish to the Orton Cena match. Now, obviously, I wasn't too thrilled about the match going into it, but I really do think that they did the job they had to do, you know. And Orton as the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, you know, so it's like, okay, I just want to see what happens on Raw tomorrow night. So my question is, the Daniel Bryan versus the Wyatt family match, it was great. I loved it. You know, it was great storytelling. It's like something that that's what pro wrestling is all about at the end of the day. It's just storytelling. Just, it told a very good story, you know. And my question is this, Greg. It's just a simple fact that, you know, nowadays a lot of times when I just look at pro wrestling, or specifically WWE, I felt like they have watered down a lot of their product, you know, because they're more of a corporation. And, you know, it just seems like they're just trying too much to cater to Wall Street or too much to cater to the kiddies. I can accept the fact that it will never be like it was back in the Hogan era or the Attitude era. You know, it's a different environment. Like, what do you see them doing to perhaps try to get back some of that fan base that they have lost? Like, I would expect them to get some power moves into the company, as well into the You know what I'm saying? But that's pretty much all I have. What do you see WWE going to do in the near future? And there's another question. Here's another question. On the subject of pay-per-views, now, you know, given that the last four pay-per-views for TLC started up, had, you know, wasn't all that special and had a screwy finish, this one had a good finish. It had a clean finish. You know, I honestly think at this point in time, WWE doesn't need to have monthly pay-per-views. You know, it doesn't give matches a proper build. It doesn't give them the great shine that it needs. So, I mean, do you think WWE at any point will, especially with WWE Network coming next year, do you think they might end up just doing away with the monthly pay-per-views and just make it all about Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, WrestleMania, and Survivor Series? Or do you think they're just going to keep that going? That's all I have.
Thanks for the questions, Damian. Good to hear from you. The monthly pay-per-views, once the network hits, it sounds like most, if not all, of the pay-per-views will be housed on the network. So they won't, I guess they'll still technically be pay-per-views because you're paying for the service of the WWE Network, depending on which format WWE chooses, with the heavy rumor being that it's going to be an internet-based service and you're paying a monthly subscription fee. So it's still technically a pay-per-view, but it would be housed on the WWE Network. So I don't think you're going to see WWE get away from those at first. I think they're going to use those as a way to entice viewers to buy the WWE Network because, in effect, they'd be getting the pay-per-view at a cheaper rate plus tons of other footage that they wouldn't otherwise be able to get. So I think for the early stages of the WWE Network, they're going to use that as a way to draw in fans. And the network also kind of answers your first question as well. You know, you talk about the product being watered down. How do you draw in the fans that WWE lost? The ratings are down. The pay-per-view buys are down. Not as many eyeballs are watching the product as, you know, even a year or a few years ago. How do you get those fans back? I think they're hoping that the network is going to be a way to do that. It's going to be a channel to do that. They'll be drawing in older fans who will be attracted to the archival footage from not only WWE, but all the other companies that WWE owns footage of, and they're going to want to draw in fans using that and hook them on the current product because it's going to be a combination. One would assume it would be a combination of the older footage and the newer shows. So, you know, I think that's going to be what they're going to be banking on. And I don't want to say it's going to succeed or fail based on that, but they're going to need a certain amount of subscriptions to really make that network worthwhile. And I think the hope is, you know, with Raw and SmackDown likely getting decent television contracts in the next negotiations, that they're going to want to drive fans from the network to Raw and SmackDown and vice versa. So I think they're putting a lot of their eggs in that WWE Network basket. And, you know, we'll see whether or not it actually works. I'm not 100% convinced, but I think it's an intriguing idea. And I really can't wait to see it get off the ground and see how it does and see what they truly offer. We move now to the 952 area code. 952, you're on the show. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, how you doing, Greg?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah. I just wanted to say two quick things. It's a jam-packed show. First is Stephanie McMahon uttered the words professional wrestling at TLC. My jaw hit the floor.
Yeah, she said it, nothing bad happened. The arena didn't collapse in on itself.
No, I thought the roof was going to open up.
Yeah.
I was afraid for my life. Nothing bad happened.
So. Yeah.
And then actually, there are three things. The caller who talked about blood before, I found it ironic that even though, I mean, it's not a hard juice, but Randy Orton got bloody legitimately, and he wasn't satisfied with that. And he's talking about legitimacy, but isn't real blood the most legitimate form of it? I'm just missing his point, I guess. He's saying they need to bleed more to prove it, even though he bled for real. So I don't understand his point.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the whole idea of cutting oneself to draw blood is And this is the caller was a guy who's watched wrestling for 35 years. He's got that mentality that a lot of older wrestlers have, is this is the way we did it. This is the way we should always do it. But it's kind of gross.
Yeah, I've been watching wrestling for 25 years. I don't get it. So I'm just still in awe that Stephanie said pro wrestling. That's still shocking me. And then he said that. So I'm just like, what is with my day today? And we got a clean WWE pay-per-view finish. The world may end tomorrow. So prepare everyone. Crazy things are happening.
The last thing I want to say
to you, Greg, is I appreciate and thank you so much for Gonzo and the Greg, one of the greatest shows ever, second only to Bruce Mitchell Audio on the PW Torch Livecast. Thank you so much for it, Greg, and have a good rest of the show.
Thank you, sir. Being second place to the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, I'll take that any day of the week. So I appreciate the kind words. Steph, she's saying wrestling and nothing bad happening, nothing bad coming from it, as well as the clean finish on pay-per-view. That partially, you kind of get the feeling from this pay-per-view that's tremendously different from the last few. And that's more of a positive feeling that you think, okay, clean finish in the main event. Maybe we're heading in the right direction. It's almost time for the Royal Rumble. It's almost time for WrestleMania. It's time to kick things into gear, and you're hoping they do that here. But we'll see. I think tomorrow's going to be a big night as well. So moving on to the next caller, the 225, area code 225. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Chase from Louisiana.
Hi, Chase. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. What do you think of TLC?
I thought it was a good show. I thought I agree. I read Jason Powell's report on ProWrestling.net, and he mentioned that the matches that were hyped delivered and the matches that weren't hyped didn't deliver, and I tend to agree with that. And if I had to star rate it, I'd probably give it probably a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
And about the Jericho thing that was mentioned about them not mentioning him, they kind of did mention him a couple of weeks ago, but I think they tried to pass it off as the two titles that he merged were somehow different than the titles that they're merging, that they merged tonight.
It's such a messy situation with the title lineages. I'm certainly not an expert on that, so I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know, how these intermingled titles, they've separated them, they've combined them, they've separated them so many times. It's so hard to sit here and say, but it's certainly something to think about.
Yeah. Okay. I have two questions. First, I like the handicap match with Punk versus the Shield, but where do you think they go next with him, with Punk? Because I don't see them putting him against the Shield again because he just beat all three of them, and I don't really see a guy on the roster that there's for him to feud with coming off of this match. And then second question is, where do you think they go with John Cena? Because he just lost to Randy Orton relatively clean compared to how he normally loses. And so I don't see them doing a rematch that soon. That's all I got.
All right. Thanks for the call, Chase. CM Punk, I'm convinced they're going to be something with the Authority, just the way that things have lined up and just the way that they set things up on TV, and there was really not a hint of it tonight. But again, John Cena losing cleanly to Randy Orton, does that set up a John Cena rematch like I talked about earlier in the show? Does CM Punk move into that role for the Royal Rumble? Does Daniel Bryan take on Randy Orton again? I think those are the three main challengers you look at if you're considering Randy Orton putting the title on the line at the Royal Rumble, which you'd almost have to do, because it would be the first pay-per-view defense of this unified championship. I think those are the three main contenders. I think Cena has a case because you could argue that a rematch clause or something would be in effect here. But Punk, I think they're setting up something bigger for Punk almost. And it feels like, whether it's Triple H at WrestleMania or whatever, that would seem to be the direction. I guess at this point, there's still a lot of dominoes to fall, and I think TLC did clear some things up with Orton winning the championship, obviously, but also the Royal Rumble is really going to be when you're going to really see those gears get in motion.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
We have James Caldwell joining us from beautiful Houston, Texas, after tonight's pay-per-view from the Toyota Center. James, how are you? Is it weird being on the other side of this now, on the other end? You're the co-host this week?
Yeah, it feels different. Yeah, I mean, I did the driving and I got the tickets. So, yeah, I'm on the other end of things tonight. So, I mean, I'm with you, Greg, that I think the three main, just jumping right to that topic you were just touching on, we were having this conversation on the way home from the show. We feel like the same thing, where the next contenders for Orton are either Punk, Cena again, or Bryan. And I would say, I mean, I feel like, based on tonight, Punk's got to be next in line for a title shot. I mean, he's the only other major guy who won a match tonight, except for, you know, a Biggie Langston type thing, but... Punk Orton at the Rumble, you know, I mean, I could see that happening, and then everybody else just kind of is in the Rumble match, but I don't know. You know, I feel like, I mean, that's the match they haven't done yet, and I don't know that match is a match you save for WrestleMania. You know, I mean, you could, but I think that, you know, probably Punk and Triple H, if they do that match at WrestleMania, so... I think you go to Punk, Orton at the Rumble, and combine that with the Rumble match itself, which is a draw. You go that route. I mean, I think that's what you have to do, and just put Cena and Bryan in the Rumble match itself.
Well, the other thing to think about is, if you're intent on doing Punk Triple H at WrestleMania, which seems to be the latest sexy rumor that's out there, you can set that up through Punk versus Orton at the Royal Rumble. If you still have Triple H in Orton's corner at the Rumble and have the authority backing Randy Orton, you can get to Triple H, Punk at WrestleMania through that match. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I definitely like that. I think that's how I'd go, especially because I don't think, and Greg, you know, I talked about this on Thursday's live cast. So I don't think you want to have whoever won this match tonight lose the belt before Mania. So I would have Orton retain all the way to WrestleMania, through the Rumble, through the Chamber, presumably. And so, yeah, I think you're right on. Have Triple H help Orton beat Punk, and that adds more fuel to that fire. Then you go right to the Punk Triple H match or Mania. So, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you have Orton retain all the way to Mania, and then he faces whoever wins the Rumble, whoever that person is. And yeah, so I think you have Hunter help Orton beat Punk, or maybe not help, but there's some sort of something happens to add more to that Punk Triple H business.
Now, turning back to this TLC pay-per-view for a minute, I know you weren't here to listen at the top of the show, but I my grade was thumbs in the middle, pointing up. I thought they did enough with the main event, with the two triple threat, the 3-on-1 handicap matches were good enough. The four-way tag match was solid enough to give it, you know, bordering on a thumbs up grade, and you being there live, obviously that's a whole different animal than watching it at home on pay-per-view. So James, kind of give me your reaction to the pay-per-view as a whole, as well as the crowd. That's always interesting, and that's always what we like to hear from people who are there live. My impression of the crowd was that it was quiet in parts. They got up for the four-way at the end, and they got up for a couple other things. Certainly the Randy Orton, John Cena match at the end, and Daniel Bryan when he got on offense against the Wyatts. And, you know, I certainly don't blame the crowd, because a lot of the matches felt like filler, and in the build-up, this was really a one-match show. So certainly what WWE was telling the fans was, this is a pay-per-view that's going to hinge on Randy Orton versus John Cena, and the rest is just kind of to fill out the other 2.5 hours. Did the crowd get that sense, too, that they were kind of waiting for that main event, or were they invested in a lot of the other matches, did you think?
Yeah. I'm right there with you in a 5.5. You know, I think this was a 5.5 show. I think, like you said, they did enough, but there's still the same issues we've seen. And I think that the crowd was definitely into the opening match. You know, CM Punk, that match, they were into that entire match. With the idea of Punk was in jeopardy at the start, you know, there was just something to that. What was the second match? The second match was, what was the second match, Greg? I've already forgotten.
The second match, are you not counting the pre-show match?
Yeah, so because you did the Punk match and then you went into
AJ Natalia.
Okay, yeah, the crowd was actually into that match too, and that was kind of surprising to me. So, to me, it looked like okay, this crowd isn't just here for one match. So they're here for, you know, to see the entire show, and then you know the Biggie Langston match really took the crowd out of the show for that match. The crowd was really hot for the tag title match. I thought that was the best match of the show, or at least the most complete match. Just the way it was structured, I thought it was structured really well. And that seemed to be the peak of the show, at least for a while. You know, after that, you had the two filler matches that the crowd had zero interest in those two filler matches in the middle. And then, of course, like you said, the Bryan business, that the crowd hot again. It was sort of like once Bryan lost, though, there was like a – this wasn't a Seattle. This wasn't a hometown Seattle crowd, but – there was carryover from that. Before the show, a lot of yesing. After the show, a lot of yesing. During the show, a lot of yesing. And when Bryan came out for the semi-main event, the crowd was hot for that. And this was an older crowd. You know, here in Houston, where I'm used to seeing a lot of families, a lot of kids at the SmackDown and the Raw tapings. But the pay-per-view seemed to bring out an older demographic. You know, that's that Bryan demo that appreciates him as a wrestler and a talent as a performer. So this crowd was really hot for Bryan, and when he lost, it was kind of like a flat feeling. It was almost like going into halftime on interception. You know, quarterback throws interception. That's the end of half. That's going into halftime. You're kind of feeling main event. They kind of got you back up again. The crowd bought into most of that main event, and then it was like Orton won, and it was like throwing an interception the last play of the game. So it's like they kind of brought the crowd up and then brought it back down again. And so I think people are kind of leaving a little bit, you know, feeling a little bit down, but still saying, you know, it was a good show overall. That was the sentiment I got from the people that I saw leaving the building. Good show overall, but they kind of felt like it was a flat ending to the show, especially the last two matches, Bryan losing. And then Orton winning without any shenanigans was sort of like, Not a surprise in a good way, but a surprise in, like, that's it. Like, that's it? That's all? It was an up-and-down show.
That's what I wanted to ask you next was the crowd waiting for that other shoe to drop after Orton won, you know, because the Authority came out to congratulate him. Was there a sense in the crowd that, okay, Orton wins, but we're not leaving our seats because something else has got to happen?
There was, I would say, as soon as Orton won, a bunch of people got up and left. But there were definitely the majority, probably 75%, looking around the arena. Because I was kind of scanning the arena. I was also watching the ring. And most people were sitting there staring at the ring like, okay, it's only, you know, it's 9:40. Okay, we're still way away from the top of the hour here. And, yeah, it was like Triple H going to come out and pedigree Orton and take the belt. You know, that was... You know, there's seven referees ringside tending to Cena as he's selling the end of the match. And there was that sense of like, okay, there's got to be more to this. You know, okay. It's like, okay, so the finish was not the screwy part. The screwy part is after the finish. But nothing happened. It was just McMahon's, and they just kind of stood there and applauded Randy Orton, and Orton just posed and danced and sort of pranced around, and it was Randy Orton. Everybody just sitting there like, okay, I guess this is it. This is it. There's no shenanigans, no pedigree and three count with the referee standing outside. You know, it was people were waiting for something to happen, and so that kind of added, it was almost to extend the sports analogy, it was almost like waiting for the review to come in on the last play of the game, and the referee says the play is upheld, game over, and just leaves the field. It was sort of like that. You're waiting for something else to happen, and it didn't. It's just like, okay, Orton won clean. He's the champ, and all right, now when, and then you start thinking about, okay, now what? You know, who's going to chase him now? Who's going to be on the chase? And that's when you start running through that. You know, is it Punk? Is it Cena again? Is it Bryan? Is it somebody else? And so yeah, Greg, definitely there was that sense of like, that's it, you know, and people are kind of waiting for something else to happen.
What was the size of the crowd like? Sellout? Close to it?
It looked like a sellout. Yeah, I remember the Raw. We had Raw the 20th anniversary of Raw in February, and it was about the similar size. It was about 10,000 sellout. Packed. It was a packed house. You know, hard camera side. There were some empty rows and stuff, but I think that they did some. You know, the marketing of the unification match. That drew people in. You know, people were talking about that and Daniel Bryan. I think people wanted to see the unification match, Bryan and CM Punk. You know, not necessarily in the matches for Punk and Bryan, but they just wanted to see Punk and Bryan. So I think right now the most over thing, I would say the most over thing right now is Daniel Bryan and the Yes stuff. CM Punk's over, not at where he was maybe when he was champ as the heel, and he was you know, really over with Paul Heyman. But he's over. You know, that crowd is still into Punk at a high level. And then the idea of the unification match, you know, that was hyped really well. The match, I mean, Greg, what was your evaluation of that match? I haven't heard what your thoughts are on that match, but I mean, I'm sure you guys have talked about it. What was, you know, watching it at home versus at the pay-per-view, you know, I can imagine at home it looked kind of rehearsed and kind of almost like a stunt match. The crowd bought into everything they did, though. The crowd was into the sequences, the handcuff gimmick, the, you know, Cena ripping off the turnbuckle and bashing Orton over the head with it. The crowd ate that up. But I can imagine watching at home as sort of eye-rolling stuff, you know. How did it come across at home?
And just the opposite, in fact. I thought there was a lot of drama to it. I had it at 4 stars, which is also what Wade Keller had it, our esteemed boss here at the Torch. We both had it at 4 stars. And I think what really helped in my mind was the fact that you really didn't know who was going to win going in. I think you could make a case for Randy Orton just as much as you could have made a case for John Cena. And that drama of not knowing who was going to win and really being 50-50 almost, really helped sell the more dramatic moments of the match. The, you know, going up to get the belt, the slow crawl that everybody does, Orton handcuffing Cena to the ropes. You knew Cena was probably going to find a way out of it. And when he did, you think, okay, maybe now he's going to win. And then Orton stops and he can say, okay, maybe now Orton's going to win. It was just that back and forth to it that I think really helped raise the match in my mind was the drama of not knowing who was truly going to win that.
Interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, because you know, you never know how it's going to come across on TV. And like you said, does the drama really work, or does the drama seem kind of like overdone? I mean, I thought they had a really good false finish in the middle when Orton did the flat back through the table on the outside, and Cena's like, you know, got the ladder and he's all alone, and you figure Orton's going to sell that table for like an hour, and then Orton pops up, and I mean, the crowd ate that false finish up. I mean, it looked like the end. You know, or what a lot of people, I'll tell you what a lot of people did was, because you figure Orton's going to sell that table bump for a while, a lot of people start looking toward the back like, oh, is this where Triple H comes out? You know, and Cena is sort of taking his time. He's parading around the ladder. He's setting it up. He's measuring it. He's looking at the ceiling. Am I right underneath it? And you're like, everybody starts looking toward the back. I mean, it was like Monday Night Wars. You know, everybody's head started turning toward the entranceway. And there was no Triple H, and all of a sudden Orton pops up and breaks it up. So people popped for that moment because they either thought that Cena was going to win the belt right there, or Triple H or somebody else was going to come down the ring and knock him off. So they structured that really well. You know, I thought they did. It was just, from our perspective, it looked a little bit over-rehearsed at times, a little bit too much like a stunt fest. But, you know, it sounds like it came across better on TV than live, which is interesting.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Yeah, and one thing I want to mention before we get back into calls is this was a TLC match with one match, or this was a TLC show with one match that actually involved the T of the Element. And while it didn't really make for a great pay-per-view because you're thinking, okay, shouldn't there be more matches that involve, you know, the title of the show? I think the fact that there weren't those matches beforehand made the main event seem more special when they did use those objects.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because it's like, do you make that last match feel even more special, or do you try to make the middle of the show feel a little bit more pay-per-view worthy? Because, yeah, I mean, everyone in our section during, especially the Miz-Kofi match, is sitting there like, isn't the name of the show TLC? Why hasn't there been a tables match, a ladders match, or a chairs match yet? You know? Because, you know, in every other year past, there's always been at least one, two, or three more, gimmick matches. And there was just the one this year. And so I think people are getting really restless, especially after the Truth Clay match really took the crowd down. And then the Kofi Miz match, the crowd was mad. I mean, it was mad. The crowd was mad, you know, because there was a sense of like, wait a second, this show is called TLC. Where are the tables match, ladders match, and chairs match? And you're sitting there watching Kofi and Miz go through this sort of, you know, the same match we've seen on Raw four or five times, and people are getting really restless. Like, you know, where is the TLC element of the show? So it hurt the middle, but like you said, it made that last match feel more special because it was the only time they involved the weapons. But I don't know that it elevated it from like a really special match to an epic match. You know, it was, I think, a wash. I would say it was a wash, you know, saving the stipulation, saving the weapons for the main event versus not using them at all the rest of the show. I think the end result was a wash in my book, being there live. You know, that's kind of how I looked at it.
Okay, yeah, and I'd be interested to get your take later on in the week, perhaps, once you get a chance to watch, especially Cena versus Orton, on TV, just to see if your opinion changes or alters any, because that's something interesting. Again, the live perspective is always interesting because you tend to see things differently when you're in the crowd, you're in the moment, as opposed to watching a relatively sanitized version
yeah.
of the show when you're watching at home. Yeah. Back to callers. You'll be on with Pro Wrestling Torch assistant editor James Caldwell and Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here on the post TLC live cast. 773 area code. You are on the air with James and Greg. What's your name and where are you calling from? 773, you're on the air. One more time. 773.
I know it's got to be Boris. It's got to be Boris.
All right. We'll hold him for the time being and come back to him then. 646 is next. 646 area code. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, how's it going, guys? This is Tom from Los Angeles.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Fantastic. I'm doing great. What did you think of the show?
You know what? I actually thought it was a pretty entertaining show. I've been listening for an hour now. And I've noticed just a bunch of people bring up how, well, the one guy was talking about blood. Another person was saying it doesn't really cater to an audience that's older than 13. But you know what? I think the thing is if you look at it, the real problem is not necessarily that they're trying to cater to kids, because I think for the most part, you know, you can't really tell the difference. You know, if you look at a TNA show like the Aces and Eights thing, yeah, they have strippers and yeah, they swear sometimes, but it certainly doesn't make for a better show. So I don't really think that's the issue. I think what the real problem is and what this show kind of sums up is that despite the fact that I thought it was a really entertaining show, it's just indicative of where the WWE is now in the sense of just rushing to something and trying to make something seem much bigger than it is and not taking the time to build it up. James, this is a question for you because I know you talk about the WWF stock, you know, once every quarter.
Every quarter, yeah.
I'm wondering if you think that the reason that they rushed to this match is that they knew that they'd been doing terribly, not in terms of a stock price, because they're obviously doing better than they have in a long time, but that the buy rates had come out for the last three shows. They've been terrible. And they know that Royal Rumble of WrestleMania season is coming up and it's going to spike then. And they were just kind of trying to sneak in a buy rate that could maybe save the quarter in terms of pay-per-view buys. And if that is the case, you know, what does that say about this company moving forward? And how long will the strategy of just trying to grab all the money that's currently on the table without looking down the line work for them? And just kind of take it from there and let me know if you need
it. I think that's a great point. It definitely feels like they, like you said, they're trying to sneak in they're trying to pop a buy rate for TLC here at the last moment. And, you know, at the very end of the quarter, especially the October shows did not come in well. And I don't imagine Survivor Series did very well, Greg. I think that buildup was not very good. So I'm sure they got some, I mean, obviously they set up TLC in advance of getting any numbers from Survivor Series. They set up TLC the very next night. But like you said, October came in weak. So I guess they figured, yeah, they needed to have something in December. And like you said, I think the biggest thing for me was we had talked about this unification match for a long time. I mean, Greg, we've been talking about that on the live cast for a while. When I say a while, I mean a couple of years. And it was always like, okay, maybe at WrestleMania they do that. And now they had the unification match. They had a clean finish. No shenanigans, a clean, decisive outcome, and it's at the TLC show. It's not even at WrestleMania, you know. And like you said, I think they rushed into it. I think they felt like they had to get something out of TLC. And, you know, the alternative was Cena against, who? I mean, the alternative for TLC would have been Cena versus a World Heavyweight title contender, which they had none of because Cena went through Del Rio. And there's no one left for him to face on quote-unquote, the SmackDown side. And then you have Orton as champion. I mean, do you do another Big Show match? Do you do another Daniel Bryan match? Do you go to the CM Punk match that now they have for the Rumble? So I think they looked at the alternatives and said, you know what? We're kind of stuck here. We don't have a lot of alternatives. And we have a three-week turnaround. What do we do to try to get a buy rate for TLC? And so I think you're right. I think they wasted the unification. They rushed into that. But I think they looked at their alternatives, and this is their own fault. This is their own – they booked themselves into a corner with this. And they said, well, what are we going to do? Well, we got to have something big. And, I mean, the only other option would have been Orton versus Cena, not a unification match, just a straight-up match, one-on-one with one of the – with, I guess, both – well, I guess you end up in the very same position anyway. So, you know, I think they said they had to do it. They had nothing else they could do. And so I agree with you. They wasted the opportunity. I just think they put themselves in a position where they didn't really have any other alternatives. Greg, I'll throw that back to you. What are your thoughts?
Well, just a couple of things I want to hit on that you and Tom both mentioned. With pay-per-view buy rates, and this is not WWE's fault, but it's an indicator that lags. And what I mean by that is you don't get immediate feedback on those pay-per-views in terms of the number of buys like you get with Raw ratings.
Yeah.
Okay? You can tell and book the next week's Raw based on the previous week's ratings if you wanted to. Whereas you might not get the buy rates for a show until 2 or 3 months down the line, so you don't know if what you're doing is working until 3 months after you did it. And by then, you would have had to book another two pay-per-views. So it's just the nature of the beast, almost, that pay-per-view. And this isn't an excuse because this is not new. WWE has – this is how the pay-per-view business has been. So this shouldn't come as a shock to WWE. And the other thing is the making something seem big, where I agree that on one hand you would want to do a unification match at WrestleMania, because if you're going to have the biggest match in WWE history, you should do it at the biggest pay-per-view of the year. It just makes sense,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you've got this WrestleMania that's going to do almost 1 million buys guaranteed before you even put a match on the card, okay? So would you rather, and I think we've had this discussion before about other matches, would you rather use a key matchup that you can plug as such a big deal to help prop up a lesser pay-per-view and to maybe pop a buy rate for a TLC, which otherwise may not have done so well? And I think that's the push and pull of having that kind of match. In this case, you probably want the time to build up that unification match. You know, they had 3 weeks. I made the argument earlier on the show that this is a match that should have 3 months of build, and we got 3 weeks of build.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, yeah, WrestleMania would be good. But if WWE had the foresight to start building this, say, in September or October leading up to TLC, I think that would be okay to do it on that show, because you'd get a nice buy rate off TLC. Plus, you'd already get the million buys of WrestleMania without even having this match on the show.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem with having so many pay-per-views. In, you know, TNA tried to come up with a solution to that, and they just don't have the discipline. And I fear that if WWE did the same, let's say WWE cut to 8, I still don't think they'd have the discipline to pull it off anyways. But if we're talking in an ideal world, WWE would have had Survivor Series at the very beginning of November, and then they would have had an entire month and a half to build toward TLC. And so they would have had just one pay-per-view in October or none, you know, either one or none, and then have Survivor Series maybe the first or second week in November, and know ahead of time you're going to do a unification match at TLC, and then you have, I mean, 6-7 weeks to really build up. Orton is on a roll. He's getting victories on TV. John Cena's on a roll, man. These guys are, you know, they're 6-0, they're 7-0. They're lining up for, you know, the biggest match at TLC. But instead, you know, like, it's that 3-week turnaround. You're like, wait a second, you know, this is a unification match that we've been talking about for 3 years. And boom, in an instant, they're finally going to do it. But, you know, it's like, wait a second, let me get my anticipation going here. But they don't give you time to do that. And so, yeah, it does feel like it's sort of like that, you know, the pay-per-view issue kind of hurts their ability to then make something special seem really epic and then really draw a nice buy rate instead of just trying to desperately pop a buy rate. And so I think it points to they have too many pay-per-views and not enough time to make them feel special.
Yeah, and that's the scourge of WWE for years, is that the number of pay-per-views that they have to adhere to. But we'll see how that goes, especially with the network coming on, and see if that changes anything at all as far as how they build these shows. James, we haven't run into Sarge yet on the phone bank, so he promised us on Thursday that he was going to call up and give us what for about this pay-per-view, so I'm still waiting on that. We'll see if we run into him in the next few callers. He's probably waiting for you. When he heard you, he probably thought, okay, James is on, I can call him now.
Rich Van, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here, I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Van. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
Next caller is the 917 area code. 917, you're on the air. Please state your name and where you're calling from. Hello, 917. I can hear you in the background. 917. All right. We'll put them back on hold and go with the next caller. Next caller is the 708 area code. 708, please state your name. Where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Vaughn from Chicago.
Hey, what's up?
You know what? Looking at the show, I thought it was a pretty decent show. Give it about a six. Going to the unification match stipulation, I think it would have been better if they would have built this match when Punk was a champion for 434 days, or if they would have done this right at the end when they decided to merge the brands back together. I think it would have made more sense on either those two times. You could have had Cena win the World Heavyweight Championship. You got Punk, the longest reigning champion in 25 years or whatever it was. And then you could have brought that together and it would have meant more than some 3.5 week, 4 week angle had you just tried the hot shot. But my question is concerning the Royal Rumble. Given the fact that Daniel Bryan just lost to Wyatt, and I do understand that the Wyatt did need this victory, is there any way possible for Daniel Bryan to maybe win the Royal Rumble? And that could be the big payoff for the fans of sticking with him throughout 2013. I mean, it's hard to argue that he's had a year, excuse me, that anyone has had a year as hot as Daniel Bryan in 2013. I mean, the guy won 5 Slams the first day. Is there any way possible that he wins the Royal Rumble, goes on to WrestleMania, and gets the big payoff that everybody has been hoping for?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Vaughn. And that's an interesting question, James, because I don't think it's too early now to look at Royal Rumble winner contenders. If we're to assume now that Randy Orton, who won the title now, and let's say he keeps it till WrestleMania, and let's say the winner of the Rumble does get the title shot at WrestleMania. It's not a situation where they instead choose to face The Undertaker or something like that. Who are the contenders out there? Daniel Bryan is one. I would have to say CM Punk is one. John Cena is one. All those three baby faces that we've been talking about for facing Orton at the Rumble are all possibilities, I would say, to win the Rumble. Then you think about a guy like Sheamus, who's been on the shelf, who may come back at the Royal Rumble. Those are the really big four names that I can think of. Well, Vaughn brings up a great point, and I see Daniel Bryan winning the Royal Rumble and avenging all of those screw job losses in the fall on pay-per-view with that big WrestleMania unified title victory. Is my head in the clouds, James? Am I just dreaming, or is that a legitimate possibility?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think if you're looking at it just from a storytelling perspective, no politics, no looking at, you know, did this guy draw? Why didn't we draw well here? This pay-per-view, whose fault is it? If you ignore all that and look at just a storytelling perspective, then, yeah, I think the storytelling arc is Bryan got screwed here, 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 and here. He drifted away for a little bit, but the crowd still was, like, hot for him and wanted him in the mix. They wanted him in the title mix. And then what does he do to get back in the mix? You know, the authority won't let him in the mix. What does he do? He's got to win the Rumble. And then who's the champion at the WrestleMania pay-per-view? Well, it's Randy Orton, who was the guy who was the roadblock along with Triple H to Bryan having that rightful crowning achievement moment. And so, yeah, I think from a storytelling perspective, you have to have Bryan win the Rumble, and you have to have him face Orton, and you have to have him beat Orton for the title to have the triumphant moment where all the fans get to go yes, yes, yes in the Superdome, and it pays off that six-month discouragement that, you know, that fans of Bryan have felt since SummerSlam. I guess by SummerSlam it'll be 8 months, you know, from SummerSlam to Mania. So I think that's the storytelling way to go. Will they do it? I don't think so. I think it would be good for business. At least I think it would help WrestleMania because I think all those fans are coming in internationally and, you know, the fans that would like to see Bryan get the victory. I don't think that would sell WrestleMania. I think that Bryan's not there yet as a mainstream draw. You know, like an Undertaker streak or a John Cena or a Triple H versus Undertaker or a Shawn Michaels. You know, Bryan's not at that level as a pay-per-view WrestleMania draw, but I think that they can get him closer to that if they pay off his storyline, and that would help out in future years down the road if Bryan continues on a trajectory of becoming a mainstream lead and accepted by the mainstream star. So I think that this would help him on that journey. Will they do it? I don't think so. It'd be nice. I think it would be good for business long term, but I'm not going to say that they're definitely going to do it. Until they go all the way with him, I cannot buy into the idea that they will go all the way with him. There's no proof yet they will go all the way with him. And so right now I have to say that, no, I don't think they'll do that.
James, I mentioned Sheamus. I mentioned Punk, Bryan, Cena, four possibilities to win the Royal Rumble. At this time, a month away from the Rumble, are there any names that I didn't mention that you could see as a possible winner for the Royal Rumble match?
I think the candidates have to be Cena, Bryan, Punk. Like you said, Sheamus if he comes back. There's a Roman Reigns, but I see him more as like the guy who gets the big run, you know, who gets all the eliminations, and then Dean Ambrose eliminates him, and there's some sort of deal that plays in WrestleMania there. You know, I know on Thursday we talked about Reigns and Undertaker maybe being a match for Mania. I think that would be a good match. I feel like though their idea for Mania is the Shield breakup, and I think that they might save that official blow off of the Shield for Mania. I'd rather see Reigns versus Undertaker with Ambrose doing something to cost Reigns the match. Like I said on Thursday, not that Undertaker needs a reason to have an out for winning a match at Mania, but. Something to where then that leads into the Shield breaking up. But so Reigns would be a candidate just because he's Reigns. But I think your top four have to be unless there's a part-time guy who kind of gets thrust into the mix there. I think it's got to be either Cena, Bryan, Punk, or Sheamus. That's my final four pick. Yeah.
Yeah, there's always a possibility of a Brock Lesnar or a Triple H or, you know, one of the part-timers, like you said, who could sneak in and win it. But I kind of think that's pretty unlikely at this point anyway. Next caller in the queue, it's the 713 area code. 713, you're on the air. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
How you doing? This is Carlos from Houston.
Hey, Carlos, how are you? Did you go to the pay-per-view tonight?
Yes, I did.
All right.
Hey, I just want to mention that you guys do a wonderful job. I really enjoy listening to your show and keep up the good work.
James, is this a friend of yours that you've conned into complimenting us here?
That's funny.
No, I will say no to that. I was going to ask you, Carlos, that where were you sitting at the show?
Yeah, I was section 419. I was at the upper level.
Okay.
I'm glad that it was a sellout. For me, I thought it was a sellout. And I had a wonderful time. And it was kind of cool to see Mr. McMahon, you know, with the limo popping out and everybody was cheering or whatnot. But the only thing that I just was wondering about the show is, like, when Mr. McMahon was talking to Randy Orton, I couldn't hear anything. And I don't know if you saw that, James. Did you?
Yeah, we noticed that. It was weird. They had zero audio play. There was the McMahon segment with, Orton backstage. There was no audio on that. The deal with Cena, there was, like I think we heard, like, the very end of that exchange. And then when they showed the studio panel, we heard none of that audio. There was that Miz and Kofi deal on the pre-show, Greg. I guess they had a little scrap. We saw no audio or heard no audio of that. We saw no video of that. It was odd. You know, I don't know if that was on purpose. And I might need to talk to Ben Tucker about this. Ben Tucker, who's gone to every pay-per-view this year. We met up, PW Torch Specialist, Instant Reaction, Ben Tucker. We met up at the show. I'll have to ask him if they do that at the other pay-per-views. Because I don't remember any other reports of no audio on the videos that they showed. So, at Raw and SmackDown, they show the audio, and they show the audio with the video, you know, the backstage vignettes or whatever. So That was odd because we had no idea what they were saying, if there was some sort of secret message being exchanged or what that was about. But yeah, I'm with you, Carlos. I didn't hear any audio from where I was in the hundreds, but, so it was odd.
Yeah, James, actually, we didn't get it on TV either.
Really?
And we didn't get it for either of those backstage segments. And you weren't sure if, and they've done this before where they have the camera kind of eavesdropping on a conversation in the distance. And they have no audio for it. And they've done that in the past, and you're not really sure if that's what they were going for or not. I noticed it in the he talked to Orton first, and then he talked to Cena. And trying to, you know, figure out if this is what WWE's intent or if the audio was really low, it sounded like as the segment went on, they either got...
Oh, it looks like Greg got disconnected. So Greg will call back in here in a second here, but... Yeah, I mean, that's weird because it didn't look like, and I'll just add from my perspective, we saw the video in the building, and it didn't look like they were doing the faraway eavesdrop. It looked like they were doing, like, you know, a straight up just, you know, this guy's talking to this guy, let's hear what they have to say. So because I'll add this in later, we saw the backstage Brawling Buddies little skit there. And the audio was up for that. We heard the so I will stand corrected. We did hear audio on that segment only. We did hear audio on that one. So it wasn't every single segment the audio was off. But so for that silly little skit backstage, we did hear audio on that. So that was interesting how we heard that audio, but we heard audio for no other segment. So when Greg calls back in, I'll ask him about that. But those segments with Orton and McMahon and then Cena and McMahon, it didn't seem like they were – the eavesdropping type. I know what Greg's talking about, that sort of the faraway camera. Ooh, what are they talking about? It looked like they wanted you to see what was happening and hear it too. So it was odd that there was zero audio on the Orton thing. And then at the very, very, very end of Cena, I think we heard a little bit of audio of, like, you know, what, just the background noise as the stuff was going on. So it was, you know, it was kind of interesting. As Greg's calling back in here in a second. So I don't know what that was about. And I was going to ask Greg if there was some sort of commentary on top of it. So I don't know. But Carlos, let me throw it back to you. Did you have any other observations from where you were sitting at the arena?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the crowd. I loved how everybody was just, like you said earlier, about the yes chants and all into the John Cena versus Randy Orton match, which I was anticipating like throughout the whole show. I was really looking forward to it, honestly. The match that I kind of felt sorry about was the Miz versus Kofi. I did hear boring chants, and I felt kind of bad. You know, I don't know why some of the fans would disrespect the wrestling world, I guess, saying those kind of, I don't know, I'm not saying derogatory, like, words, like, boring and disrespectful, you know, because they're in the ring and they're trying to do their best they can, you know?
But, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I really enjoyed the show. I went to WrestleMania 25 and 17 in the Astrodome when I was growing up. So I've been, throughout most of the time that they come, I'm normally here. I'm normally there, but yeah, today's show was pretty awesome for me. I really loved it.
Yeah. I'll say on the boring chance, I think the crowd. I don't think that was necessarily directed toward Kofi and Miz so much as it was directed toward that frustration of there wasn't a tables match, a ladders match, or a chairs match at that point. I think that the audience was sort of waiting for a special match. You know, obviously everybody knew they were waiting for the TLC match, but I think that, you know, you had that Truth match and the Clay match, which wasn't any good, and then you follow up with another match that had no background, no hype. I mean, obviously they had the brawl in the studio. They've had matches on Raw, but there was no advance announcement of that match happening. So I think the crowd was getting restless, and it just felt like the crowd was sitting there like, where are the special tables, ladders, or chairs matches? And so I think that's where it was more like a frustrating chant of boring. So it does come across like being disrespectful to the wrestlers. I think the crowd was just getting frustrated at that point. It had been half an hour since a good match. And so I don't, you know, so it's unfortunate. And I did feel bad for Kofi and Miz. They didn't deserve that. I think the crowd was just kind of, it was more frustration with WWE, I believe. That's how I took it. Greg, I know you're back on, and I wanted to throw it to you on the backstage audio. We heard the audio for that Brawling Buddies skit, but like we're talking about, we didn't hear any audio for the McMahon skits. Were the commentators talking over that, or was it just dead air while they were showing McMahon backstage?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think they were talking over it. I think it was, and that's what made it so confusing, is you thought you were supposed to be hearing what they were saying, and yet you weren't hearing anything, and the announcers weren't saying anything. So there was that kind of confusion over who was supposed to be saying what and what they were supposed to be saying.
Yeah, yeah. It just looked weird. You know, I was like, because and it didn't look like, and like you said, look, you know, usually when they had a kind of far away, eavesdropping, you know, we're not supposed to hear the audio type thing. This one looked like a straight up, you know, we're supposed to hear what they're saying, and we couldn't. So, yeah, it just seemed kind of strange, that whole setup. So, you know, technical glitch, miscommunication, I don't know. But, yeah, it was just kind of interesting. So, Greg, do you want me to go in and hand off to me? I know you've got school in the morning. It's, gosh, it's 1 o'clock your time. Did you want to hand off to me and I'll kind of wrap up with phone calls?
Yeah, that's fine. And if Sarge ends up calling and telling him I said hi and hope he enjoyed the show. John Cena didn't win, so he should be okay if he's listening. hopefully he's not throwing things or, you know, his TV didn't fly out the window or anything like that. But give him my best.
All right, we'll do. All right, well, Greg, well, thanks for just getting the show started and holding down the fort while I was driving back to join in the live cast. So good to talk to you, and we'll talk again on the next live cast.
Definitely. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip. And you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. No!